Welcome, people, to the Out of Bounds YouTube channel. You know, I was just thinking, I actually need to update the intro or have like different ones because there was about to talk Formula One and there was no Formula One clips there. It was just James Harden and football. But it is what it is at this point. I would think of something for next time. But as I just mentioned, we are here to talk Formula One as another Grand Prix has just happened. And I am joined today by Sam on the Little Media. How you doing?
I'm good, bro, man. You know, nearly end of the week, so I can't complain, man.
Yeah, and also joined by Abbas Verstappen. How you doing?
I'm taking that. Do you know what? If you need any Verstappen clips or Red Bull winning, let me know. I can send them through to you.
Well, as you know, so we've just had the Miami Grand Prix and it's another Red Bull 1-2. So we're going to start with the qualifying because after qualifying, I think we all thought we were going to have an interesting race anyways. And all because Charles Leclerc spun out. I don't know what turn it was, but he spun out in the second run, which means Verstappen couldn't put his time in because he fumbled the first one and he started from ninth in the grid. And I remember you saying something in the group chat about how Charles Leclerc is overrated. And someone on my TikTok as well mentioned something about how Charles Leclerc wouldn't be able to compete for a championship because he has too many mistakes in his game. What's your take on Leclerc at the moment? Do you think, because a lot of people say it's the car, a lot of people are saying it's the mistakes, what do you really think about Leclerc at the moment?
Do you know what? There was like periods last season, for example, where, yeah, you could blame Ferrari. But then what started happening was you started seeing if the car was running well, the driver was making a lot of errors. When you look at like the top drivers in F1 right now, it's normally the car rather than the driver making that mistake. And you start seeing it a lot more with Leclerc. And that's when I was like, look, let's be honest. People are liking Leclerc because, and someone remember, who was the driver that passed away?
Jules Bianchi.
Yeah, so there was that connection with Bianchi and Leclerc for as well. But also, because Max is the villain in F1 right now, he was the guy that was going head-to-head with him outside of Lewis Hamilton when it came to last season. So you had a bit of affinity with him to be like, look, you can do something. Hopefully you can win, etc. But even when he had that big lead last year, and I believe it was the biggest lead that anyone's ever fumbled in F1, I knew for a fact the mistakes are going to come in, strategy and the car, but also his personal mistakes. And if you look at it this season, for example, Sainz has had penalties. Leclerc's had some issues as well. And this is like prime example. He was going, not necessarily pole, I would say, because Max, I think, personally would have got pole, but he would have had that competitive car for just a one lap to put himself in a decent position. And that's where he could have probably challenged Alonso, for third position. But again, an error by him. And again, there's only so many times you can realistically blame a car when you see so many driver errors. And I think we're getting to the point where we're realizing, look, you're not in there. You're not even in a battle for third at this particular point. You're so behind your teammate. You've hardly got any points. And what are we, four races into the season? And you're looking like somebody who is driving for a mid-table team.
Just to piggyback on that, Basha, do you think, yeah, and that's obviously a question for you as well, Richard, yeah, do you, because I hear what Abbas is saying. I don't necessarily think that Charles Leclerc is overrated, but do you think sometimes because of the situations he knows that he's had with Ferrari in terms of the car and the setup, do you think there's a lot of pressure and he overcompensates for that? So he's going to be prone to more errors because he doesn't believe in the car and he thinks he has to work that extra or try and get an extra tenth of a second out of the car by doing something extreme just to kind of make it competitive. If he was in a more competitive car, maybe he wouldn't have to take as much risk and then that wouldn't lead to as many errors as he's doing. Because I don't think Charles Leclerc is overrated. I think if you put him in a good car, that's the setup's right and going to allow him to challenge, I do think he will challenge Verstappen because they're very, very similar. In GP2, those two were competing against each other and I believe Leclerc actually did beat him. And Max was very, he didn't like going against him, but because it was very similar. Max wasn't going to back out. Leclerc wasn't going to back out and it was always going to be competitive. Whereas now, because of the car, it just seems like Charles is always trying to overcompensate for the deficiencies of the Ferrari. That's my point of view.
Just to answer a question a bit, I think I do get where you're coming from, because I think what happened was, so at first, when he did make the crash, obviously he takes full responsibilities and whatnot, talking about obviously coming making those mistakes. But then after the race, you could see him talking to Carlos Sainz, and he mentioned something about how the car is very hard to push to the limit. And two things is, one, obviously I understand the obviously he has mistakes in his thing, because you can see he made the same mistake in France as well. But I also do think it's not clear cut just looking at the points and saying he's having a bad season, because you look at is it Bahrain, the second Grand Prix of the season, where he was on pace to finish third and then he had to retire because of reliability issues. And then you look at the Australian Grand Prix, where he was then taken out in the first round. So I think he has been a bit unlucky as well. And as well, the Ferrari, as we've all known, like in race pace, hasn't really been that great. They always, like, especially Sainz, always complains about tire degradation, which means they always have to manage their tires, which means they can't go faster. Which, so ideally, want to start higher up the grid as possible. And you can argue that over one lap, anyways, Leclerc is the fastest guy on track, because you saw the pulse he was able to take at Baku. So I do agree, like, you always have to overcompensate. And one last thing as well is, when I think it was the Australian Grand Prix, when Hamilton overtook Verstappen, where Verstappen felt like he was pushed that wide. Verstappen mentioned something about, even though it was aggressive, he didn't really mind it too much because he knows he has a quick car, so which means he's able to overtake Hamilton easily again. If you don't have a quick car, I feel like there's more risks you have to take to get into the high position. I think that could be one of the things that could be happening with Ferrari and Leclerc at the moment.
Do you know what I say to that? I hear it, because right now, fortunately for Red Bull guys as well, like, that is the cream of the crop. Like, nobody's really competing with them. And what are we, four races into the season or five?
Five.
Everybody already knows that anyway. Like, they're running away. Most likely, we're going to see Max and Perez be 1-2 in the championship. Constructors is already completed. But to then turn around and say that, look, Ferrari can't be competitive. Your driver has to do this, push it to a certain point, is a little bit unnecessary. I get what you guys are saying, though. Like, I'm with that. But if we look at it from a totality, even from last year, for example, that car was good. And then Max's car was the one that was having errors. And there was a calmness within Red Bull where they were able to pick up the victories and continue on, whereas Leclerc was actually making errors. I do think he's a lot more error prone than people allow themselves to believe. But again, it comes with experience. The only problem is, like I said, it's not going to amount to anything. I just personally, unfortunately, with the state that F1's in right now, there's only one team that realistically can go ahead and win stuff. So you're just playing for third place at this particular point. And last year was obviously, like I said, the best chance. And yeah, they had car issues. But like Richard said, when it came to qualifying, we always had Ferrari for most of the time, I'd say, as one lap race pace, elite. But then when the race actually started, unfortunately, they had some errors. You'd probably start off wrong. Verstappen would just be mentally a bit more stronger. But I hear it. I hear what you guys are saying. Like, my thought process don't change about Leclerc. I do find him a little bit overrated.
Okay, so fair enough. So moving on to the race, because as I mentioned, that Leclerc crash did mean that Verstappen did start ninth on the grid. But I think by like lap 15 or 14, he was in second place. And then obviously, I think Horner was talking about the great job Verstappen did from like lap 20 to lap 44 or whatnot, and then he was eventually able to overtake Perez on track to go on and win the race. Now, before we even move on to how the actual race went, do you think Perez is actually good enough to mount any challenge against Verstappen? Because throughout the whole week, after Baku, Perez is there beating his chest, talking about we should be first, if not for the issues at Australia. It was 6 points. Everyone is asking Perez, can you compete, this and that. And I know Sam has spoken about how they tailored the car for Verstappen, but, I mean, if you're ninth on the grid and you're first on the grid in the same car, which Perez seems to like, is a race that everybody thought Perez is going to win, and he gets beaten by like what, six, I don't know how many seconds, I think around 10 seconds or something. So is Perez actually good enough to mount any formidable challenge against Verstappen?
Let me just quickly take this one first, please, Abasha. Yeah. In regards to that, I don't think he is, because as much as I like Perez, yeah, he's a very situational driver, innit? He's a person where he's in his element where, okay, he's at the back and it's raining and he knows how to manage his tyres, hold people off, you know, pits at the right time and is able to win a race based on circumstances. But if you put him and Max in the same car, which they're in, and go for like out and out speed, and in terms of how, you know, to drive that car, you need to be very aggressive, he can't do it because he's not an aggressive driver. Whereas Max is a guy very similar to Hamilton that they race on the front foot. It's like in football. Yesterday we saw it with Man City. Man City like to play on the front foot, whereas Real Madrid like to play on the back foot and then try and counter. And that's their game. And if you were to look at Perez as a footballer, he'd be a counter-attacking team. He likes to have things in his situation where he's able to absorb all this stuff and then just use a particular situation to win a race. So I don't think as a driver, he's good enough, but that's just the thing about F1. You want to always have your number one driver and your number two driver just to complement your number one driver. So I don't think anything's going to change. And look, I don't know what's in Max's contract, but I guess in Max's contract, it stipulates that he's the number one driver and he's going to get all the best beneficial stuff. So it's never going to change. So just in the nutshell, your question, no, I don't think Perez is capable to mount a challenge with Verstappen like that.
I'm kind of on the same wavelength, and this goes to 2 points. I think he can challenge to a point, because at the end of the day, if nobody challenges, it's just impossible. Like, this guy's just going to run away with it, which is fine. The only problem is Perez is in a place where before he came to Red Bull, he had no contract. Vettel overtook him, I think, was at Racing Point.
So yeah. I said again,
where was he at? Was it Force India or Racing Point, whatever it was?
The pink car.
Then Vettel overtook him. So he was basically without a contract. Then you get that offer from Red Bull. Look, we want you to come back a secondary driver. You take it. And then even last year, there was like little hallmarks of, can Perez deliver? We're losing out in terms of the constructor's title. He's not giving us the points. Max is giving us the points. And now you see what he's doing. Realistically, everyone is happy, and Perez has to put on this. I think personally, he has to put it out there to say that he can compete. Realistically, he'll know that the job he's doing gets him paid, gets him secured money, gets him podiums, gets him,
Race wins.
Yeah, so he's in a very good position as a secondary driver to a point. He'll compete, but like we saw on the weekend, when it comes to it, Max is head and shoulders above him, in my opinion anyway. And the way like he managed, like you mentioned, that Christian Horner managed, said about lap 22, 42, 43, the way he managed the hard tire was to actually pick up the speed, considering Perez couldn't pull away on mediums, Max went through the field, but we'll talk about that soon. But I don't really think he can mount anything. What he can do, however, is stabilize and solidify the fact that Red Bull will basically clinch up the constructors very quickly, but also he can finish the highest he's ever finished for a championship. And for him, considering the career he has and the age, in reality, it's a win. Like, if he can, like I say, if he wins certain Grand Prix that he's happy with, Monaco being another one again, there's certain moments in his season that he'll be very happy with. And right now, he'll be happy again, no matter what.
No, I mean, I kind of get where you're coming from, but it's just one of those things, and I kind of agree with you guys. I just feel like the gap in talent just seems too big a gap. Like, even going back to last season as well, when you see Max starting 14th on the grid, 10th on the grid, and he's still able to overtake Perez. And I must have mentioned that, obviously, people talk about, there's a problem when Verstappen is doing, but it wasn't a problem when Hamilton was doing it. But the things, obviously, I've not been watching Formula One for that long, but from the highlights I did watch, Rosberg did seem like a competitive driver. It's just that Lewis was faster, but Rosberg was giving Hamilton problems, and he was even eventually able to win a championship still racing.
And also, remember, they had an inter-team rival. Them guys, like, Toto Wolff had to get on the thing and say, guys, don't fight. Like, these guys want to fight each other. They want to kill each other. Like, it just showed, like, it was so heated that at one stage, Rosberg didn't like Lewis and Lewis didn't like Rosberg. I remember, I can't remember what race it was, and something happened, and then Rosberg just threw the cap at Lewis.
Yeah, I didn't see that in the room afterwards.
There was so much tension that it was going overboard. And even in that year when Rosberg won, Toto had to come on the radio to Lewis at Abu Dhabi and say, "Bro, don't slow down the race. You can't win the championship. Just take it," because he was trying to back everyone up so something could happen to Rosberg. Like, that's a proper rivalry, isn't it? Whereas this one is, yes, you know, Perez is going to win his sporadic races here and there, but we know that Max is a better driver and Perez doesn't have the heart like that to compete, in a sense. Not in a bad way, but I just see it like that.
Look, like how you said about Rosberg, so basically Rosberg had that competitive drive in him to be like, look, I can get, I've been close, I've been there type of thing. When he had Bottas, as much as they wanted to play along with it, realistically, it wasn't there. And also, he had an element of a Ferrari challenge. For me, like, in terms of since I've been watching F1, like, any sort of rivalries within teams for the top teams, you mentioned Hamilton and Rosberg. And then the last one I really remember was Vettel and Webber.
And then
to a point when Ricciardo came in, kicked out Vettel, and then Verstappen came in, kicked out Ricciardo. That was it, really. But they weren't challenging for that. They were challenging for that number one position. But it's very rare that you get both guys that can go head-to-head and compete for it. Because for team harmony, it's really bad. And at the end of the day, they always say, drivers is what the driver wants, but the team wants the constructor. Yeah. And they'll do what the team wants.
100%. Okay, so just moving on in terms of the actual racing. Do you think there's a problem within Formula One at the moment? Because, so obviously, we had that 2021 season, which is the anomaly where the title went down to the final race. But what I think is that last season, I think for me anyways, I think it was a bit enjoyable because I felt like Verstappen won his championship purely based on merit. In terms of, I feel like, because as you said, Perez was in the same car, and Leclerc still beating. Plus, I think there were opportunities where Mercedes could win a couple races. They were getting podiums. Ferrari will win a couple races. But I think it's just Verstappen was just such on another level to the point where as in there was nothing other drivers could do. I get the feeling that this season, Red Bull's result is, or Verstappen's results and Perez's results are barely paced, based on how quick the car is. And you don't get to see enough of the merit. So, two questions. Do you think Formula One is in trouble in terms of how big a gap there is within Red Bull and the rest of the teams? And two, in regards to the rest of the teams, and the statistics could prove me wrong, but there just doesn't seem to be a lot of overtaking going on at the moment. Like, the races just seem a bit boring. Even comparing it to last season anyways, do you think there's a Formula One problem there, or is it just what it is?
The first thing I'd probably say is, I want to go back to Verstappen where he was in the start of the race. The reason, one of the few reasons why he would have gone through quickly as well is because everyone understands they're not racing him. So instead of wasting your tires, wasting energy trying to stop a guy that's evidently going to pass you, let him go through, you guys drive your race. And that's where the first problem initially begins. Formula One's not necessarily in a issue, not necessarily in a problem, because this has been basically a pattern that has been ongoing for a lot of time. So they've had this before where one team's basically just dominated. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. It breaks down then what's the rest of the field got. And if you can make it competitive within the rest of the field, then to a point it gains attraction. Unfortunately, it's not going to gain attraction to a lot. It'll continue to gain attraction within. But now we've also got a problem where Aston Martin is just dominating second spot. And now it's just like, okay, where's Mercedes and Ferrari going to go for third? And that's the only problem I've got. With overtaking, sometimes you just have them races where...
Well, the thing is, I understand what you mean. Just sorry to cut you off quick. I understand what you mean, but I was saying is that because this is the second season we've had the new regulations. And I mean, no matter what we want to say about past seasons, from what I was told anyways, they were saying these new regulations was to make get more overtaking done and let cars follow each other closer. And as I said, if I was just to judge, because we only have two scenes to judge this off, just last season alone, I felt like there was more overtaking and I felt like the field was closer. I just felt like Verstappen's merit and Verstappen's driving was enough to take Red Bull over the edge. I don't think, in terms of pace, I don't think they were that much better than Ferrari. And I do think Mercedes started coming close towards the end. But then this season, there seems to be not enough. Like, look at Ocon in Baku. He was on the same old tyres for like the whole race. And what's it called? Drivers were still struggling to overtake him. You get where I'm coming from, which is why I'm asking, is there an issue in that aspect?
Do you know what? I think, if looking at Mercedes, and I think in terms of regulation, the regulations are normally like 5 to 6 years. And I think in terms of Mercedes and the money they have and the great team of staff and employees that they have, I don't think that they're going to let this dominance run for so long. I think maybe not necessarily next season, or I would say maybe halfway near the end of next season and going into the third season of this regulation, I think that's when, you know, Mercedes will probably be a little bit more competitive with Red Bull. Because look, Red Bull had a great car last year and they had a base to start off to go into this new season, which allowed them to, you know, add to it, just make a little bit of adjustments. Look, they've got Adrian Newey, which he's a genius when it comes to designing cars. So he knew what he had to do to make this car even supreme than what it was last year. And I think what you can see from Mercedes, similar to what they did last year, they just made some errors in terms of the design and certain parts on the car. So I think next season, Mercedes, they've brought back James Allison, you know, that was integral when they was winning championships. He's come back from designing yachts and doing stuff. I think if they get him back on a full season from next season and stuff, I do think they'll be competitive. Because look, Mercedes is a big brand. They don't want to go through 6 years without competing or challenging. You know, F1 is about showing people what you can do in terms of your brand, whether it's Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari. So I think Mercedes more so than Ferrari, because Ferrari's always been lagging behind for a while. I think Mercedes will come back and kind of try and compete anyway. I'm not too sure if they'll win, but they'll compete and make it very entertaining, in my opinion.
I think one thing I'll say about overtaking is it depends on what you want for overtaking. So what I mean by that is, if you're looking at the front of the field, you're not really going to get much, because unfortunately we've got, like you said, the Red Bull dominance. If you look at the middle of the pack, you'll see it. Now, the only problem is with the middle of the pack, who really cares, if we're being honest, between 11 to 14, 15, 16? Nobody does. The only time you really care about overtakes in the middle is there's a few laps left and there's like a great story. For example, let's say a Williams is potentially going to get points on the board. And it's like, okay, there's about 3 or 4 cars. There's a DRS line coming up. Who's going to get DRS? Who's going to be able to make the overtake, etc.? That's when it gets entertaining, because realistically, for a lot of average fans, and to a point, even myself as well, there's only so much you can really care about overtaking when it comes from 11 to 14, 15. And then obviously, like I said, the final few points is possibly where it gets exciting. But at the top of the field, you're just not going to see it, because these cars can't keep up. And when it gets to DRS, they're not in that 1 second time frame to be able to do it as well. But interesting you said about that, because there's a lot of that debate that when it comes to like DRS, for example, you'd rather be the car behind than be the car in front, because it just allows you to overtake a lot more smoothly. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's like DRS periods in a race where someone's second and like, let me just stay second. Because you see with Leclerc and Verstappen, they'd allow each other to flip-flap and overtake, because they knew that the second they make that first overtake through DRS, there's a second one coming, and Leclerc was really smart doing it, and then he'd be able to get the extra advantage there. But I think there's not necessarily an overtaking problem. There's a problem where overtaking and excitement occurs at the front of the pack, because the guys at Red Bull are just too quick to be able to.
That's where that happens. That only changes if the other cars, whether that's Aston Martin, Ferrari and Mercedes, level up in the near future. If they level up in the near future, then you're going to have overtaking in the front of the pack. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. If they get better, then we'll see at the front. But at the moment, you're not going to see no overtaking because Max can dominate this and build up a gap of bloody 25 seconds. And it's just like, he can still pit stop and still be in front of you. Like,
like I said, nobody's racing Max because if you're racing Max, you're doing damage to your own race.
Yeah, I think just bouncing off that as well, I think one of the things that I've been also looking to, because I used to watch, because obviously, because I've not been watching Formula 1 for a long time, I always go back and watch like races from like 2015, 2016. And I think one of the issues that I feel like I'm having at the moment is in terms of the tyres, because I think I mentioned it a bit earlier, but I think in terms of tyres, I think a lot of races are just becoming one stop. And I feel like the races that seem to have like more than one stop, maybe like a two stop or three stoppers, at least, even if there isn't overtaking, you know that you have to look forward to what strategies this person going to do. Are they going to go for the softer tires and give you more stops? Are they going to try the longer tires? And I feel like with that way, it gives more entertainment in the races. And I've seen people talk about how they should, Formula One should change their tire sponsors, all that kind of stuff. Because they used to have something like super soft and then stuff, and then and all that kind of stuff.
Obviously, like the medium compound tire was the hardest tire on the race. Yeah,
and like also said,
it comes down to the suppliers because at the moment it was Pirelli. It might before in the past they've had Bridgestone, they've had Michelin. Yeah. So depends on who the tire manufacturer is, then they set the tire specs as well. And then also remember Pirelli had an issue where they had the tires they were too soft, and obviously people were curbing them in and they were blowing up. So they had to make the tyres a bit more reliable because in those senses, yes, you want the race to be entertaining, but then you're putting the risks, you're putting the drivers at risk as well. So the tyre situation, it can be frustrating at times.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll just obviously see how the next race goes in regards to that. But just sticking on in terms of, so with the whole Miami thing, we had the whole introduction thing, whereas in... LQJ was doing the whole introduction, and then you got Will.i.am doing the whole orchestra stuff. And even last week in Baku, had the new sprint weekend format, which those two things, and I think from what I've said, they're going to try and start doing different stuff with like different races to impact the culture and stuff. And you see like drivers like Verstappen, and you've also seen George Russell, so they're not too fond of all this new stuff. And I feel like there's also like diehard Formula One fans are just like, stop ruining the sport, keep things the way they are. Do you think Formula One is becoming a bit of a circus, or are you embracing the change and thinking it actually makes the sport better?
Let me quickly take this, because this is my forte. I love the business side of sports and stuff. So when you deep it, you got to realize that before there was a hierarchy. F1 was owned by one guy, Bernie Eccleston. He made all the decisions. He would go to the racetracks. He would negotiate everything. He didn't have a commercial team. The rumors were that Formula One was such a big business, there was only like, he only had 10 employees because he would just do everything on a handshake, And then they had to sell it. And then they've sold it to Liberty Media. And Liberty Media is owned by a big media tycoon called, I think, is it Joe Malone? Or something Malone. And he owns the Atlanta Braves, and he owns a few people. And what they saw is that when they bought Formula One, they looked at the balance sheet and said, you know what? There's so much money being left on the table, And we see our counterparts in America, the NBA and the NFL, when they do their stuff, whether it's All-Star Weekend or the Super Bowl, it's an event. And they're saying, if we want to, you know, attract the younger demographic and the younger audience, we have to have all this ancillary program around it, whether it's Drive to Survive, where it's a build up to a race weekend. It's not just a race day. You want to have an event on a Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday and build it up. So for me, you know, trying to get the newer audience and make it more younger and just not having old people, I like the way it is. I think the people that are traditionalists, they're going to say, you know what, we just want to have the race and keep it like that. And you've seen since Liberty has taken over, Formula One has gone from a $5 billion company to a company that's worth $17 billion. So they are doing something right. They have got the right formula. So for me, sometimes you can't just be stuck in your ways and say, oh, let's keep it the same. I think you do need to change it. And if you want it to be a global sport, you have to do global stuff so it reaches a global audience. And if it wasn't for that, Verstappen wouldn't be able to be getting paid $50 million a year, or Lewis wouldn't be able to be getting paid $47 million a year. So as much as, you know, George and Verstappen are complaining, the money that F1 is bringing, and the audience it is allowing them to get sponsorship deals and these big packets. So I don't think anyone can complain. That's what you signed up for.
Do you know what I even
know this stuff?
Pardon?
I don't even know this stuff. This is what I said, the Formula One expert.
There you go.
You know what it is? It's always going to be that thing. Like, let's say you compare it to football, for example. You throw in Champions League halftime show, for example. There's going to be people who complain about it. You put in a national anthem at the start of every single Premier League game. There's going to be people that complain about it. When you make change to something, people will complain about it because what it takes away is from the fact that the race should begin at, let's say, 3 o'clock. It might not necessarily begin then because they've got all the other stuff happening. So let's say NBA, for example, right? When does a game ever begin on time? It just doesn't because they have to get through.
I saw Richard tweet that. Like, why has the NBA got to lie about...
NFL's normally like a minute or two out, but the NBA is always awful because they have to do everything, like from player introductions to national anthems to getting everyone off and then all the other stuff as well. But as NBA fans, we've grown accustomed to it because it's Americanized and we're good with it. When it comes to this particular race, for example, let's be honest, they're in America. So if you're in America, you are going to do everything possible to Americanize the event. And then you'd look at the time it's on in America, for example, like to get fans to actually watch on that particular day, knowing that a few hours later, there's going to be probably NBA basketball going on, or sorry, on the same time there's playoff basketball going on. You have to do a little bit more. So again, it's not going to happen in every race. You're not going to get it at Silverstone. You're not going to get some kind of big British fanfare or anything like that. You'll get little things that happen on the weekend. But at the end of the day, like every Grand Prix for me, I look at it as an NFL weekend. Like it is a spectacle because there's not that many of them. And they do get spread out over, let's say, like you might have one, you might have like back-to-back weeks and then you'll have a two-week break. And then the next race becomes an event. It's not just like a fixture, like how you see in football. So I don't mind it. When it comes to sport, I'm going to be honest, I don't really tune in for it. I'll wait until the formation lap. I'm like, yo, okay, three or two. Like, the formation lap is just hitting. And then I'm back on and I'm watching.
I'm not going to lie. I tune in for it because especially the grid walk and at these major adventure, you know, I remember last season when LeBron was at the playoffs. Bro, I saw LeBron there. I saw Rich Paul, Mav, Kevin Love. Like, it's a whole celebrity thing. Everybody wants to be there. Like, you say that now. When you go to Monaco, Monaco's always been like that. It's who's there. You're seeing Shaq there. You're seeing people that don't even care about Formula One, but they want to be seen because it's an elitist sport. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, Monte Carlo, Monaco is the pinnacle. Watch when the Las Vegas one comes there. Everyone's going to be there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let me just rephrase what I meant then. I don't need to tune in for it because I'll just see it on my phone. So I'll already have it set up for me. So if I need to see that grid walk, someone will already post it on Twitter for me. If I need to see what's happened before someone posted it for me, I can watch the race and go back and watch clips like that, and I know I'm not missing out.
I hear it. Look at last year when Martin Brundle called Paolo Bianco Patrick Mahomes. Do you know what I mean? It's just funny. Do you know what I mean? It's part of the spectacle, and I think you have to embrace it because it's always been like that. But they pick and choose. It's been like that at Monaco. It's always been like that at the Australians. It's been like that at Silverstone. It's who's there. Yes, you might not have the spectacle beforehand, but you always got celebrities there, people just talking. And look, at the end of the day, you gotta go with the times, man.
This is the thing. Like, the entire thing technically is an event. Like, you're not doing everything in one day. You are It's a weekend, so it's technically an event. So,
I remember I was speaking to one of my friends, because obviously he watches Formula One, and I was talking about how it's a bit weird for me to want to go to a Formula One race live just because you only get to see, even though you get to see the big screen, you only get to see like one part of the track at a time. And he basically said, like, no one actually really goes for the race is all the stuff that is around it. Like, because he's been to Monaco as well. And then obviously you get the star-studded people, you get the fan events, you get all this kind of stuff. And I've always said in terms of, like, obviously Formula One could be in a good place if you just have your regular 3-3 practice and stuff. But at the end of the day, you're always going to want to evolve. And I think Sam said it best. It's like, the reason why these drivers are getting this kind of money is because of what they're doing to bring in new eyes. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like, especially ever since that 2021 season where we had the final race of the season, Formula One has been as popular as it's ever been. And I said, it's one of those things you can see. And if I'm correct, that's the scene that introduced the sprint race, right? When Hamilton started from like 20th, then he got to 5th, then he had another 5-grid penalty in Brazil. I think
it might have been,
So it was just stuff like that, hearing about how Hamilton was able to go from 20, not that he can't do it in an actual race, but the sprint weekend give people more action to see more racing. And I don't really think anyone choosing to, well, I don't anyway, tune into free practice anyways, because sometimes you feel like you're interested for him and then you just see cars running around. So it's like, how can you get more driving into the actual thing? So now I think I'm all for seeing change, because if you're not moving forward, then you're moving backwards. Mm. It's just that, is what changes do I think is necessary? Because as I mentioned, the new sprint format, I wasn't against it. I was all for it. But then the whole introduction stuff is like, and is this stuff I really care about or stuff like that? Yeah, so.
The reason why they implement all these sprint races, because, again, similar to like when Lewis was, you know, there, they were fed up of just seeing the same people starting in pole. So they thought, let's find a way to like mix it up where you can have Lewis start in 5th. Yes, he's got the fastest car, but let's see how he navigates going through that pack. And so I think they're just trying to do it because they don't want it just to be very just dominant. And that's why, going off a bit off track, that's why people love the NFL, because there's so much parity. Like, in terms of, yes, the NFL is so big, but everyone gets the same about amount of income. And then you get your own sponsored income, but you have a salary cap. So you can be, you could finish 32nd like the Bengals one season and then make it to the Super Bowl. Do you know what I mean? So that's what they want to kind of have, where it's not just, oh, every year, you know, it's the Patriots or, you know, the Chiefs. It can be the Rams or whatever, or whoever it can be. And I think that's what Formula One want. They want, okay, yes, Verstappen's dominating now, but maybe an Aston Martin can win 5 or 6 races and a Mercedes can win the 5 or 6, and then you know the two Red Bulls battle out for the next 10, so it's even. Do you know what I mean?
Just a quick question, just before we go to our last up with the Alonso stuff. I just want to ask, because we didn't do a review of Baku. I want to ask, what do you guys think of the new sprint format they brought in? Because at first I thought I was all for it, but then when I actually sat back and think about it, I don't really think it benefits anyone. I think Albon said it best. Because with the old, with the new sprint format, so it's like you've got your qualifying for the actual race, then you've got a sprint qualifying, and then but then no matter where you finish in the sprint race, you still go back to the original one format that you did, which and then so it's a bit funny. So because only the first 8 drivers will get points, if I'm correct, and in the sprint format, so which means teams like Williams and stuff, with the old normal sprint format, whereas in is where you finish in the sprint, you then go into the grid. Let's say Albon, for example, he's not going to get any points in the sprint weekend, and he doesn't get the chance to improve his grid position. So what does the new sprint format do for those drivers? So are you guys for the new sprint format, or do you prefer the old way, whereas in the slower cars actually get something out of this?
So I'll say this. The only reason, like you mentioned, there is because it allows us to have more points for the season, so it makes certain things more competitive. Plus also what it means is we have one less free practice session and one more meaningful thing on the entire weekend. But realistically, seeing what you said, an Albon makes 100% sense. Why am I doing this qualifying followed by a sprint when the sprint means literally nothing to me? I'm not going to finish. I'll be looking to finish in the top 10 in a normal race, let alone a sprint where there's less laps, and me being able to push through this crowd is not going to happen. So I hear it. Like, unless you are like how Perez had the perfect weekend, you're not going to amount to really much from it. All it does, like we always say, is it gives certain teams an opportunity, but the reality is it just spices it up a little bit more at the front, because someone can take that few extra points that they might need, and that's really it.
I'll be honest with you. I haven't really done too much due diligence into the new format. I heard about it, but you know, sometimes when you've been watching Formula One for a long time, you realize a lot of stuff are just gimmicks. And to be honest, I kind of got disheartened with qualifying the last couple of years anyway, because it became a formality and it was never nothing interesting anyway. So as of late, I don't really pay attention to qualifying. I just like to see at the end to see if there's any shakeups there, like maybe Max has finished 10th or he's starting from 11th or Lewis is starting higher up than he generally would. But my main objective is, okay, cool, let me just watch the race, because again, qualifying is who can do something on the fastest lap, but the race is not a one lapper, is it? So it's kind of irrelevant where they are, especially if they're in the bigger teams, because you know, over race pace and over a whole race, Lewis Hamilton's going to outperform most of the guys that probably qualify ahead of him anyway, because they've got that fast one pace lap.
Like he's done to Russell.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? So to me, I've kind of lost love with qualifying over the last years, to be fair.
Okay, and just finally moving on to the last topic. Alonso's got another podium. I think they said every single race he's done this year, he's got like 15 points. And it was funny because when he was doing his interview, they must have first said that, Alonso, you're now back. And it's like, actually, Alonso, you never left, but the car is now back with you. Do you feel like... And then also, he seems to be so like jolly on the mic and stuff, whereas in when you hear about what Alonso used to be like in the past, like he's been involved in a couple scandals, he's hated his teammates that outperformed him, like Lewis and all that kind of stuff. I know he just seems so jolly. How far do you feel like Alonso could go with Aston Martin?
I think it'll be like that last season, George Russell, Mr. Consistent. He's in a better car. He knows, yes, his teammate, his dad owns the team, but in terms of knowledge and, you know, resume, he's the number one driver. And he can use the experience to say, look, I think we should tinker with this. We can tinker with that. Like Lance Stroll's is a trust fund kid. You know what I mean? So it's not something that you need to be wary of. And I think, look, Alonso's going to be happy because he's in a dominant car at the moment. If it was roles reversed, he'll be making a lot of noise. He'll be grumpy. He would go into the pen when they're interviewing, saying, look, the car's not set up for me. But right about now, everything's hunky-dory. So this way you're going to see, you know, Alonso cheesing because he's been out of, you know, the podium realm for years. You know, he might get a podium here and there, but now it's a bank for him to kind of finish either third or fourth. So for him, it just keeps on adding to his legacy. If he can steal a win here and there, he's happy with it. He's content. He knows he's not going to win or he's asked to win a championship in that car. And like I said, if he wins a race, that's a plus. If he finishes on the podium, he's winning. So I think he's going to be happy while he's winning and he's the number one driver.
Do you know what? I literally say the same thing. Like, happy Alonso is coming because he's in a position, one, where he can have a meaningful race. Like, his race isn't just scraping for the final few points or anything of that sort. It's, okay, we can compete for third. Like you said, depending on what happens sometimes, if something happens to the Red Bull or whatever, he could potentially compete for the Grand Prix itself. And then when you look at the fact that your teammate, the fact that you can radio in and be like, okay, what's Stroll done? Okay, no problem. Great job for finishing ninth. Great job. Well, exactly. Yeah, let me be honest. It's because that guy's not competing against you. Yeah. If you're going head-to-head with this guy for that podium and he goes a bit reckless, you're not going to get happy Alonso. I said it, I think, way earlier on. You'll get happy Alonso right now because everything's going well. Yeah. But if there's that little flip where for some reason he goes 3 to 4 races, where he's finishing 6, 7, 8 and Stroll's finishing above him, and then you see guys like Leclerc and Hamilton competing, and I mean like actually competing for like the second spot and third spot, then you'll hear him getting a bit more frustrated. But for now, like Sam said, everything's fine. He's probably outperforming the car. They didn't really expect it like this. And yeah, they can't really get mad at him and he's chilling himself.
No, it's funny. Just before I ask the last question, because it's something funny that Sam said when he said that, obviously, because really untrue, he said his teammate is Lance Stroll, trust fund kid. And it's funny because Lance Stroll, when he did an interview like a couple of weeks ago, was talking about how he never really gets the respect he deserves because of where he came from. And I was thinking, like, damn right. I mean, Perez outperformed you. Yeah, then Vettel outperformed you. Then Alonso's outperforming you. Like, when are you going to outperform your teammates for once kind of thing? And you can see the what Alonso's doing. And then even with Leclerc, that, as I mentioned before, had the failure and then also got taken out, he's even still ahead of Lance Stroll anyway. So it's a bit funny how light and day. But let's say, hypothetical, that if Alonso, let's say he had a championship car, do you think he has a championship run still left in him before he eventually decides to retire? Or
I don't think so. I think Alonso has never been, like, from when he was at Renault, he was never an aggressive driver. He just had pure talent and he was able to irk the best out of a car that was overperforming. And you've never seen him be in a car and he's dominated. So I don't think he's that type of Max Lewis driver where they're just about speed, aggression, and wanting to dominate. Like, not in a bad way or a rude way. I would say Alonso is a better version of Perez in terms of how he drives. Very skilled, very, you know, tactical and stuff like that. But he's never a driver that wants to be on the front foot. Like, okay, I want to get pole and I'm just going to dominate a race. He's a guy that likes to, okay, defend off guys, overtake, come through the back and win like that. So even if you put him in that Red Bull, I still think Max would outperform him because them, like, I always say this, Max and Lewis, they're very similar. They're just speed demons. They love speed. They will get speed out of any car, where not every single driver can do that. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think, if you put him in the Red Bull, I just think it would be another Max and Perez situation.
Yeah, I kind of feel in the same way. Like, I don't think it's easy as well. I think a lot of people don't understand. I don't think it's easy to jump shit from where Alonso's been in his career for the past few years to then boom straight into a team where you could potentially win. I do think it's a bit more trickier than that, and that's why, like, sometimes I do think Max doesn't actually get credit for all the wins that he gets because everyone just says it's the car. But there's a level of skill that comes with being able to know that, look, I'm still going to be able to do this regardless of where I am. I do think Max is just that guy right now. He's younger, hungrier, and he would dominate still. It's just one of them things. But, I mean, if you said to Alonso, do you want to be in the Red Bull or Perez, I think he'll take it.
Yeah, of course. he does want to get a couple race wins. So
Hamilton will take it with jump ship and take it. I'm sure Hamilton will even jump ship and take that Red Bull.
I don't think he would. Hamilton's next move, yeah, for him, Hamilton's about optics and doing something that hasn't been done before. And he knows, like, what it means to win a championship in a Ferrari. And if a Ferrari had a car that could compete with pace and stuff, like, he would definitely go to Ferrari and try and be that guy. And it'll be very weird that it's a black guy that's going to bring a championship to Ferrari for the longest. You know how Italy is, and Ferrari's very archaic in it, and it's, you know, they got their hierarchy, they like to do things a certain type of way. And I think that's why people are very worried, because he hasn't signed his extension with Mercedes and people are thinking, what is he looking to do? And he's always
talking about that on the weekend as well.
Yeah, and he's always said he wants to drive a Ferrari. So if Ferrari can come with a comparable pay packet and say, look, this is what we're going to try and do with a car, I wouldn't be surprised if Lewis said, you know what, let me go. Because everyone tries and use a stigma against Lewis that he's only been able to win championships with a Mercedes engine. He won it with McLaren, which was a Mercedes engine, and then he's sixth with Mercedes, obviously a Mercedes engine. So he might want to pick up that challenge, say, let me go and win Ferrari their first championship since God knows when.
Get Carlos Sainz out of here. But yeah, that is very insightful Formula One stuff. I said, especially when Sam starts going on about the business stuff, start naming the owners and stuff. off the top of his head, I would have had to do some research for that. Man really knows his stuff. but yeah, as usual, do you guys just want to shout out your stuff? In fact, they can see the tags anyways, but I'll let you do it anyway.
There you go, man. It's there. Undiluted Media _ on Insta. Twitter's Undiluted Media One and YouTube's Undiluted Media. So like, share, subscribe, support the ting, man.
Yeah, and I've just been rolling at the bottom for like the past 40 minutes. Follow me on like TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter at outofbounds_UK for daily sports content. Think for the one person that has tuned in, and for anyone that is watching it on demand, like ITV likes to say, thank you for tuning in too. And until next time, safe.